You're listening to WRFG Atlanta, 89.3 FM, your station for progressive information. WRFG provides a voice for those who've been traditionally denied access to broadcast media through the involvement of a broad base of community elements to guarantee that access. In the utilization of the Foundation's facilities and in its programs, the following communities will receive first priority: those who continue to be denied free and open access to the broadcast media, and those who suffer oppression or exploitation based upon class, race, sex, age, creed, disability, sexual orientation, or immigrant status.
About you. But my special guest is in the studio. Her name is Jane Pickett. She is the director of a short film called The Men's Room. And it's quite interesting. I saw the trailer, plus I saw, I guess it was the short film itself that I saw, that I was sent a special code, by her publicist. And I watched it. It was fascinating. It was, I didn't expect what I saw, okay, because, given, you know, just the written stuff about, I expected something else, but it was really, really fantastic. I mean, it was just, it just depicted through the movement, the characters, the acting in it, the facial expressions. It told you the story, and I thought it was just fascinating. But so Jane. Mm-hmm. Tell us, I just want to have a little conversation here, like we're sitting in the living room, and how did this get started? I mean, you know, what made you think about it? You know, what motivated you? What was the interest, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. I can't tell you what it means to me to be, like, in Little Five Points, because I grew up here.
Like, you did?
Well, I grew up in Atlanta and went to public school and then Woodward Academy for high school. So this area of town was always the progressive, fascinating area of town for me. So just driving over here was very emotional, because it feels so wonderful to be back in this,
like, coming
area.
Home.
Yeah, and with a professional film, and with something I'm super proud of. So,
right. And where are you living now?
I live in Los Angeles.
Los Angeles, good old LA. All the way across the country. So you flew in, and you're in Atlanta.
I'm staying with my family.
You still have family here.
Yeah, my parents are still here, and then my producer from LA is flying out in a couple of days, and he's going to be here throughout the whole Atlanta Film Festival.
The film festival starts
March 23rd and goes to April 1st.
Okay.
And the Men's Room is screening as part of a series of, it's called the Pink Peach LGBT series of narrative shorts.
Okay.
And it's going to be on the 25th at 4 p.m.
Okay.
And so it's in a series. It's one in a series.
All right.
But to answer your question, where it came from, I guess there were a couple things, because I wanted to make a good short film.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking, you know, researching that and thinking hard on it. And I realized that I feel like a lot of issues that shorts have is that they try to do a feature idea in the short form. And so I basically was sort of reading, and I thought about, well, what can a short do that a feature can't? And basically, that one of the things that I found was that it can get at more controversial subject matter, like, in a more powerful way. So I was like, well, you know, that's interesting. Could be a good move for me. So I was thinking about that also, you know, what's controversial subject matter would be sort of interesting for me to approach. And then, you know, I thought of two things. Basically, you know, I basically was in Griffith Park and an area in Los Angeles, and in that park there's a lot of gay cruising there. There's like a particular area, and I remember I was walking there one day and I saw, you know, a couple people looking around, and I thought, I sort of have walked into a kind of a cruising scene. And it occurred to me that that's actually pretty cinematic, you know, sort of furtive glances back and forth. And also, growing up, my best friend was gay, and I remember him showing me sort of a cruising spot behind a gas station and whatnot. And I became, you know, was fascinated then and fascinated now by gay cruising and the mystery and sort of suspense around it, if that makes sense.
Wow. Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense to me. We had a conversation earlier on the phone. You had called me earlier today, and we got into a little bit of all this. And I could associate to the friendship with the guys and all that, because in New York, that's who I hung out with, as I told you earlier. So, but it was always a curious thing to me, mm-hmm. of all the things that they would do and they would tell me about, you know, and it was like in disbelief. But how is it, how, you know, as far as the trailer it goes and stuff, have you had any reaction yet?
Well, a lot of the, basically the trailer's gone out to a bunch of different blogs and, you know, I've shown mm-hmm. people, and people seem very intrigued mm-hmm. About it. I think that it's sort of, the trailer really enhances the suspense aspect, you know,
right,
like
right.
it sort of ends with it opening the door to the bathroom and then goes black. So
right.
it's, it, you know, the suspense is part of it. I think, you know, a lot of people, a big, you know, something that comes up a lot is they're like, wow, does this still happen? You know, do people
yeah,
still
yeah,
do this,
yeah.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny to be asked that because, you know, when we were actually on set in Griffith Park in Los Angeles filming it, one funny kind of anecdote story that happened was that the park monitor didn't know what our film was about. So we were actually on location in the park, and the park monitor said to me, you know, just so you know, and the, you know, we actually, you know, we have to close these gates at a certain time because of activity here, you
mm-hmm,
know.
Mm-hmm.
And he had no idea that the film was dealing with cruising, but he then indicated to me that this was like a kind of a hot spot for cruising. So it very much, you know, is happening and was actually happening in the location where we ended up filming, which
mm-hmm.
was pretty a wild experience, you know.
Wow.
And also there was like a sign on the bathroom that said, you know, warning about lewd conduct in public.
In
and,
public, yeah.
You know, like plainclothes police officers patrol this area, whatnot, so.
Wow. Yeah. Have you found it here in Atlanta yet?
You mean just like a
the cruising part?
Oh,
of
well, I mean, no. I just arrived the other day. So.
Oh, you haven't had time. Okay.
I haven't been digging it up. No.
You haven't been digging it up. Yeah, but it's quite interesting. You know, like I said, it was a fascinating piece for me just to see it and how vivid it was as far as the message,
mm-hmm.
you know. There was a, you had mentioned to me on the phone about the police interaction that the, you know, it was like the other guy was a cop,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know how far you want to go into it and stuff.
Oh, I mean, we can go as far into as you want. That's,
yeah, I mean, yeah, so that you don't give off the, you know.
Well, you know, I think
want the people to go and see it, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny. I don't think that information, you know, the fact that he finds out
mm-hmm.
that the man he's sort of courting in the park is a cop, I don't feel like that gives, you know, I mean, it's not, I feel like the story gets it sort of a bigger negotiation of intimacy. So, you know, the reveal that he's a cop isn't, you know, something that would ruin the film for people,
mm-hmm.
I don't think, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But okay. Yeah, that's what's at the heart of the film to me, that it was sort of fascinating, was actually this issue of, you know, that's the core of what's fascinating to me, is the idea of using intimacy as a weapon, the idea of someone
mm-hmm.
luring someone, you know, because basically what happens in the film is this main character, Thomas, goes into the park,
mm-hmm.
makes eyes with this man,
mm-hmm.
and they exchange, they have this silent exchange, and, you know, he sort of, you know, thinks he's going into a situation with someone that's interested. And
mm-hmm.
I think that's what's fascinating to me, you know, when you think of, like, you know, Senator Craig, like, who was
right.
arrested in the airport and whatnot,
right.
of, like, there's just something really powerful and tense about, you know, thinking that, you know, something as intimate as sexual attraction, you think you're on the same page with somebody, and then you find out that they're a cop, that it's kind of an intense kind of betrayal. It's
a betrayal,
an intimate
right.
kind of betrayal,
mm-hmm.
you know? And then at the same time, of course, you know, it's a public place, and, you know, who wants their child going into a bathroom where people are, there's like a sexual interaction happening. So
mm-hmm.
my goal with the film has not been to sort of talk about bad guys or good guys,
mm-hmm.
But to expose the complexities around the issue,
mm-hmm.
And take a good hard look at it and an honest look at it. So
mm-hmm.
that's been the main goal.
Right. With everything that's going on, like, you know, with you know, within the LGBT community and all the attention it's getting, you know, I'm you know, I'm just wondering how. Like you mentioned, you know, that's politicians and stuff that have been in those situations, and it's been revealed, et cetera,
mm-hmm.
et cetera. I'm just wondering, you know, it makes me think, okay, so, you know, What is going to be the reaction in that circle of folks, you know, because knowing that these things have, you know, do happen and have happened to people that they know, mm-hmm. you know, how is it going to affect their conversations and...
The reaction by which community?
The political community.
The political community. Yeah. You mean, and you're talking about specifically to this type of film?
Like right, well, the type of, and the action, and, you know, and the intimacy and what happens, because this is what happens, which people have denied, and, you know, and they have been caught at it, but they still deny, and so forth and so on. And, I mean, when you say it's like a betrayal, mm-hmm. I mean, how does it affect that guy who is trying to hide it?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right?
I mean, I just wonder about reaction from
well,
different groups.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I'm going to answer that question in kind of a roundabout way. I think,
yeah,
is that, you know, one of the things that's fascinating to me is that, or that I thought a lot about was, you know, the identity of the main character. Mm-hmm. You know, is it? It's a young guy, you know. I realize the implications of, like, let's say I put a ring on the, like a wedding band on his finger.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It really changes the story, because then it's like, oh, this guy is maybe a closeted person going into this experience, you know?
Right.
That I feel like, you know, there's, you know, I intentionally leave that open. You do not know who this character's particular background, you know? And I think that is, to me, was really important, because I was really concerned about pigeonholing this behavior as mm-hmm. something only, you know, a closeted
person
does, or
right.
a certain person of a certain ethnicity, or a person who's, you know, particularly unattractive in some way. I mean, because there's been some interesting reactions on some blogs where someone's like, oh, no one this attractive would do this.
Would
you
have
know?
To do that, huh?
Yeah.
So they sort of kind of see it as a... unfavorable, like they don't look on, you know, favorably on it. It's an action that somebody would do because there's something wrong.
Oh, right. Interesting. And how interesting. I mean, so many of the questions that come up about the film, in a way, reveal so much about people's assumptions about the behavior, about other people, what motivates them, what they do. And so for me, there's an important, I think, it was important to leave an openness there,
mm-hmm.
So that it couldn't be written off, you know,
right.
as one particular thing. I mean, and I really, you know, what's funny is, that the casting, you know, I mean, just picking this character, you know, finding the right actor that could, you know, I mean,
that could do that.
That could do that. Exactly.
Right. Right.
You know?
Okay. Was it difficult?
That was, well, yes, it was super difficult. Actually, I think that me and my producer had a moment where we realized, I mean, we really had to step up our game in looking for the right person,
uh-huh.
That you needed somebody that could communicate so much with their eyes. And, you know, Russell, who plays the main character, he really blew my mind, because he sort of rides an edge, I think, between... he has a wonderful, like, vulnerability and innocence in
right,
his eyes, and
right.
at the same time has an edge, which I think
And
you
he
need.
Looks so young. I don't know if he is or not, but he looks very young also.
He does look young, but it's interesting. He has enough of an edge, I think, that you're not, like, oh my... I mean, you're worried about him, because,
uh-huh, uh-huh.
you know, he's taking a risk. He's
right.
you know, doing something that would be, I think, scary for anybody,
mm-hmm.
but he has enough of that kind of thrill, I think, in his eyes, or edge to him, that you get a sense that it's not... this complete delicate flower of a person, you know,
mm-hmm,
who's
mm-hmm.
just gonna, you know,
right.
just walking completely into the fire, you
yeah,
know.
Uh-huh.
I think that's an important nuance to the casting, for sure.
Yeah.
With both of them, I
mm-hmm.
think having a complexity was really important in the casting.
Mm-hmm. I mean, as you developed the story or the theme of it, and et cetera, et cetera. I mean, from what point, I mean, how did it start? And did it develop into something else as you worked along it, or, you know, to develop it? Or was it developed according to the first idea that you had?
Just like the writing process, like the
yeah, well, how you know? Because now you know when you write and stuff, usually you know that you develop it while you're writing, you know, or you get other ideas and you develop and you put that into it and stuff like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
In some cases, you know,
like it evolves.
Yeah,
it
evolves as
yeah.
you're writing, you know, because you know you just have you know flashes or you have like little bowls light up or whatever.
Oh, sure. No,
you know,
this went through lots of twists and turns. I mean, one
mm-hmm.
of the things that was particularly wild for me in the process was. because, you know, I mean, it's such a silent film. So really realizing, you know, they do talk and they talk between these two stalls in the bathroom, but what that language wants to be. I mean, one of the biggest revelations for me in the process. Am I answering you?
Yes, okay, good. I just want to make sure I'm on the same page. Yeah.
Uh-huh. One of the things that happened for me was realizing, gosh, you know, I've really gotten myself in a pickle here, because as a writer, I have two characters talking in a situation where language probably normally wouldn't happen. You know, I mean, somebody going into a bathroom to meet for an anonymous sexual encounter, I mean, it's sort of a gestural space.
Not so much a language.
Right. So I was like, well, you know, but at the same time, so there's a couple things I learned. One of the greatest revelations when I realized, you know what, they don't ever need to say a sexual comment, you know, like, you know, something like, unbutton your pants, or they don't ever need to say anything like that, because we know,
right?
You know,
right.
Everything can be communicated, and that's what's was so fascinating.
Yeah,
you know,
that's what fascinated me. That nothing, you know, there was the verbal.
Right.
You know, I mean, it was just the actions and their body movement and the body language.
Yeah.
You know, it was just fascinating.
And some of the language is also very base of the sense, you know, of...
But it was very basic, whatever they said.
Yes.
I mean, and it was like at the end thoughts, I'm trying to remember the trail.
Which also worried me, you know, because I was like, oh gosh, you know, like classic, you know, rule for myself in writing, you know, is it like if someone says... You know, if someone feels afraid, they don't need to say it.
Right.
But here you've got these two guys talking between two stalls, right? You know, what was interesting was I realized that one of the things that was happening with the languages in this film is that we were putting language, giving voice to something unspoken in a way that an interior space in the characters was spoken.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in that sense, you know, that was a big sort of risk and a choice in the piece, you know,
because
I guess just to be more clear about it, I think normally, you know, if you're looking at being super realistic, they wouldn't be talking, you know, but the film is giving the character's voice. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, yeah, that makes perfect sense when, you know, because I saw it, you know, so it's making very sense.
Maybe they'll be listening.
Yeah, it was very little, words spoken, and basically you got the gist of, you know, what was transpiring and what was going on in their heads and so forth and so on, just simply from the look on their face, just the body movement or the you know, like just not moving, you know, just sitting there for a minute. And
I love that, because I come from a background in playwriting, and one of the things I just love about film is obviously visual language,
right?
You know that, you know, that their action, you
right?
Know, you can't. I was a frustrated playwright in the sense that you couldn't see. You know, someone clenching, squeezing a chair with their hand to show that they're tense. You know, it's you can't see that even from necessarily from the fifth or sixth row.
Right.
And so I found myself kind of desiring a close up, and that's I think has a lot to do with why I switched from theater to film. Is like wanting to get in there and close to those details. You know.
Okay. So I mean, from theater to film, you did plays? Did you write any plays or anything? Oh yeah.
Yeah. For sure. I did. I moved from writing to directing when I went to New York City with one of my plays called Someone in Florida Loves Me. And
okay.
So it's been a
So did you write it and direct it?
I did.
Okay, so what makes a writer want to direct their own stuff? I mean,
Well, control.
Control, okay. All right.
Control.
I just wanted to... I just wanted to hear it.
and also, you know, just feeling like that's not, you know, there's also some things really also, I mean, a humbler way of saying it is that, you know, that's seeing the limits.
Seeing the limits of what you can do.
Of what I can do as a writer, and being like, there's something also I want to get at. I mean, one of the things I've always been jealous of about directors, you know, as I started out as an actress and then became a playwright, is that, and I've always been fascinated with directors in this way, is the fact that they set the tone of a production. And that, you know, that energy that really affects how things go, how the actors perform. That's a powerful... It's a powerful energy that I think translates into the final product. So I wanted to get in on that.
We will return to our guests in just a moment. First, a word about WRFG.
You have a pledge. A pledge.
Yes, I do.
They say you could
Yes.
Okay. You want to give the announcement and say who it is and how much?
It's from our friends at Palmer House Property, and they have donated $100.
Okay, all right. And there we go. And a little horn. They got a little bit of everything, okay?
And what they like about WRFT is the progressive tongue.
The progressive tongue. Love it. Nice. Okay, I love that. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Palmer House. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. It's wonderful. Thank you. I mean, it's like, wow. Okay, I'm going to do that horn again. All right. I like to make noise. Again, the number is 404-523-8989. Okay, and you know, part of the programming here, we are an LGBT program, but we bring in our straight allies, as Jane is, and she told me earlier on the phone that most people assume that she is LGBT or a lesbian or whatever, but she does consider herself part of the queer community and as a straight ally. And I adore straight allies, okay, because I've always said we, as a community, the LGBT community, cannot do anything without our straight allies, because, you know, as much as we stand up and we fight out there and we, you know, march, and there's not enough of us to get the things done. So we need the help of our allies, and I sure enough embrace them, hug them, love them, want to kiss them, okay? Because it's like, yes, okay? It's like, really, you know, and I find myself living in an area now. I live up in Habersham County, which is about 2 hours from here, and I, it's a red county, okay, so a lot of Republicans up there, et cetera, et cetera. But, and I have met so many people who are so open, whether they're Republican, Democrat, or, you know, whatever. They're Christians, they go to church, and all. I personally am a recovering Catholic, okay, so, and I don't go to any church. So, but, you know, there's a lot of stuff that needs to be resolved first. Okay, but, you know, when they're accountable for their actions, then I'll, you know, think about, you know, returning. Until then, but up in Habersham County, I have met some fantastic folks, and they're, you know, straight allies. But there is a undercover, you know, LGBT community. They haven't sort of kind of come out of the woods. They, you know, they've gone, I guess they've gone up there in their later years, and they have businesses and stuff like that, and they're in certain sections, I've been told. I haven't gone exploring yet, because it's barely a year in April, May. Well, May 1st, it'll be a year that I've been up there, and I have been, you know, doing a lot of stuff, and I've been volunteering at pantries, because they have pantries. Every church has a pantry, so there's a whole lot of churches up there. So I've got, there's two pantries that I volunteer at, and I've learned how to hike and all that other wonderful stuff that you do out there in the hills, in the mountains of Georgia, okay? but it's like, you know, like I said, my neighbors are great, and when I told them I was a lesbian, they looked at me, and I'm not going to say the exact word they said, but they said, who cares, that, you know, they just shrugged it off, and they just said, so what? You know, and these are people I just met. I mean, they're older, they're younger, of all ages, okay, and colors, because it's just, you know, I'm just amazed at it, because I've been such an activist in Atlanta, and there's been so much supposedly myth. I call it myth now, because it's I'm experiencing what they said we could never go to, you know. In other words, Habersham County is a red county, it's Republican, it's Christian, they never accept, you know, us up there. Well, I have an event called Idaho coming up, and that's the International Day Against Homophobia, and this will be the third year that we have organized it, and it started out for one day. Last year we did 2 days. This year we're doing 3 days, and the third day will be in Habersham County.
Oh, that's awesome.
The Democratic committee up there, which I am a member of. I mean, I just joined up stuff because I get very curious about how a place functions, and, you know, how people react to things and how they interact with each other and so forth and so on. I mean, I did the same thing when I landed in Atlanta from New New York, you know, I just joined everybody, so I needed to find things out, you
right,
know?
Right.
And that's the best way of doing it. You know, you go out there and you meet all the different people and all the active people and so forth and so on. But it was, it's so they're going to, the third day is going to be up in Habersham County, and hopefully we'll have an interaction between our out, maybe some of our out politicians will come up there and speak to the folks up in the mountains. Mm. So Idaho is going to the northeast mountains of Georgia. You know, so that's, I'm pretty excited about that.
So you go back and forth between both places? So do you have
I go back, on Tuesdays I come down for the show.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's really your, that's your main home is up there.
That, yeah, wow. I moved last year because there's just certain activities and stuff that I could enjoy a little better by being up there, and it's pretty good. It's pretty good. I mean, I'm enjoying it. You know, Tuesdays is a little rough because, you know, I drive 2 hours and I have to drive back 2 hours. It takes me a day to recover, but hey, you know, that's because I'm getting old. I can't, I'm not as young as I used to be. But anyway, getting back to you, Jane. Mm-hmm. Let's talk some more about the happenings of the men's room. When did you get the idea?
Well, like I was saying before, when uh-huh. we were kind of running around in the beginning of the mm-hmm. thing, I guess I got the idea. I really, really was after, I really wanted to make a good short film, an interesting short film.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like I said before, like, you know, in researching, like, what a short can do that a feature can't,
mm-hmm.
I found that they could get at more controversial material.
Material, right.
Yeah, and that excited me. I was like, I mean, I feel like I'm known in my community, friends and whatnot, for being, you know, subtle in my work. So uh-huh. I thought making a move like that, of getting it, something like that would be a good challenge for me.
Right.
Because I appreciate, you know, I don't like to be sensational.
Right.
So,
okay.
You know, I think it was a combination of that and then thinking of like, okay, well, what's a difficult subject matter, a controversial subject matter that is of interest to me and something I care about. And that sort of, I began digging there, you know, and mm-hmm. like I said, you know, my best friend growing up
right.
used to show me those cruising spots. And it was a confluence of things. I think yeah. there was one particular day, though, for me, where I was, like, walking in Griffith Park
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
really, like, you know, I maybe seeing someone who probably wasn't even cruising, probably just was standing there looking around, mm-hmm. but where it kind of clicked in my head that, like, you know, this is might be a good thing to do. And then I started talking to people. You know, I talked to... I talked to a friend of mine who had done this before. I started asking him about it. I talked to another person who had gotten a warning from a cop in a park.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden I was like, huh, that's interesting. And, you know, I thought I became really fascinated with, you know, this idea with the Fred that I talked to and interviewed about getting this warning from a cop. I got very fascinated with, he said a really interesting thing. Where he said that, you know, it was like the cop had stolen our language, you know, like when the cop had sort of, you know, revealed and flirted with him and then went to kind of give him an arrest or a warning. He said he felt like he had stolen
right.
the language. And that phrase stuck with me. And I was like, well, that's really fascinating. You
yes,
know?
It
and,
is.
You know, so it's like you said about the writing process, you know, there were lots of things that kind of, you know, I followed.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
lots of little threads I followed that led me to this moment, you know?
Yeah.
And also, I mean, it's a way.
Stole the language.
It's a way, it's a way in, you know, to talk about intimacy, too. I mean, this story, you know, it's, you know, I mean, someone being, I think a lot of people can relate to someone being, wanting something and being terrified of it, you know, being drawn to a kind of a dangerous risk-taking moment, you know?
Mm-hmm. I'm intrigued by the comment of stole the language.
Yeah, right?
I'm intrigued by that.
Yeah.
I mean, what do? They sit down, they plan their moves as far as how they're going to infiltrate this cruising scene.
Oh, totally. And
I mean, you know,
one of the things I thought also was so interesting with, like, I mean, just what it does to a person, I mean, in playing a role. I mean, any actor, I mean,
right.
he knows, I think, like, when you when you act a certain way, you know, when you take on a role, like a cop taking, you have to kind of go to a certain place, I think, to be convincing.
Right.
And so it's, you know, like, there's
something. How do they choose the cop that's going to do that if they actually have, you know, stakeouts like this and stuff like that, you know, where they are trying to break into this cruising?
Well, and what's the internal experience for the cop in, it's like, it never doesn't feel good to lure someone and then, you know, to lure someone to a certain point and then turn on them suddenly, like, I can't, what does that do to someone internally, and how does that feel? I can't imagine it feels good, you know, or perhaps it feels like a power move, you know. It's the just that I mean, I think that journey is a pretty fascinating one.
Yeah,
you know? Being able to do that, you know, I think that would be a big challenge for me to do that kind of job.
Wow.
I mean, you know, because it's, you know, that there's something you're sharing intimately with that person,
right?
You know? It's one-on-one. It's not like bust. It's not like cracking down on a group of people. It's you and this other guy.
One person, right? Yeah,
which is super intimate.
And then what are the expectations? I mean, just that one person. That, you know, I mean, is this like a continuous kind of thing that they do to stop this cruising? You know, stuff that goes on in the parks and the public bathrooms or whatever. I mean, I'm just trying to put it in my head together as, you know, their purpose for
the person doing that. Well, I think on some level, I mean, it's funny because it was really important to me. That's actually a really interesting comment, because I think it was really important to me in building these characters to look at them both as good guys.
Right.
And I was like, okay, so if this cop is a good guy, you know, why the heck is he doing this? And I'm like, well, I guess he'd have to do this if he really thinks the behavior is wrong. Like, he'd have to really believe that.
Right.
Now, I'm not saying that would be every cop. This is the particular
character
in this story.
Yeah.
But he has to really believe, like, you shouldn't be doing this, you know? Not, like, you shouldn't be doing this here. And I think that is sort of what makes the story interesting, it, to me, is that both of these characters are not really there to hurt anybody, you know, or not there to, you know.
Right, exactly. I mean, it's, you know, they're not there to hurt anybody. There's just a certain need that's trying to be fulfilled.
Yeah.
And you think it's on both sides, but in this case, because the one guy's a cop, he's just there to make a bust.
Yeah, and well, and the, you know, anybody that's listening that hasn't seen the film, I mean, one of the things that, again, doesn't give it away, but it's like, you know, I mean, the main character, when he goes in here, he doesn't just, one of the big things is that he goes in and then he starts sort of not behaving as one would if they were just wanting to have a sexual encounter. I mean, he gets nervous and he also starts asking questions and starts, I mean, one of my favorite line in the film, of course I could say that because I wrote it, I have a favorite line. is the line, can you love a stranger? Which Thomas, the main character, says that. That is like a wrench thrown in the situation. I mean, it's not like, you know, can I touch you? It's, you know, can you love a stranger? So he's asking a big, you know, question. A cop who, let's say, you know, here we got this cop who's there protecting the public. You know, he's there to saying, you know, this behavior isn't right. You know, I'm not, you know, here to ultimately judge you, but you're, you know, you can't do this here. All of a sudden he has somebody in the next stall saying, can you love a stranger? You know? And I think that, you know, that certainly would throw someone off.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think both of these, you know, I mean, it's both of these characters are sort of thrown off in this situation, you know?
Yeah.
And particularly I think the cop character of like, I mean, who's over there? Who's that person
talking, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it certainly makes you, you know, think about a lot of stuff all at the same time, because I know that, you know, with all my the thoughts are just going in and out of my head, and it was when I watched it, and afterward I had, you know, I just started, you know, just contemplating on it and thinking about, you know, well, wow, you know, but then remembering like the stories of in the past of my male friends up in New York and stuff, and the stuff that they used to tell me about it, and I was trying to just, you know, make sense of in my own head of it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's
it certainly gives you a lot of food for thought, as they say. You know,
I've always been fascinated with anonymity, and that's something that's come up in other work of mine, because I think there is something pretty fascinating about encountering someone, you know, who doesn't know your name, they don't know your history.
Right.
There's this experience where, I mean, it's sort of like, you know, going and working in a faraway place where all of a sudden you can reinvent yourself, or you just get to see yourself, you just see how you behave in a situation. And I think that idea of freshness, you know, or the idea of an anonymous encounter, no matter what it is pretty fascinating to me, because it's, it's very, you get to be new in that moment.
New in that moment, yeah. But what does it mean emotionally, though, to that individual?
You mean who's going through?
Emotionally, what does he take from it?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think that's.
Is emotion involved? I mean, you know.
I certainly think emotion's involved, because I feel like, I think that. One of the lines that happens is that Thomas goes in there and he goes, you know how you imagine, he talks about being nervous and how he goes into the stall in the bathroom planning to go through this event, and then he gets stopped and he says, you know how you imagine yourself going through something, doing something hundreds of times, but then when you're in it, it's different. You know, he's talking about the fact that you can plan to behave a certain way, but then you're in it. Then once you're in that situation, because it's so electric, you actually behave differently. I think, in a way, so to answer your question, maybe somebody goes into this electric, intense of a situation to sort of get to know themselves, or to,
there's something they want to discover about themselves.
Yeah, that maybe they couldn't, until they couldn't discover it until sort of they boil in the moment. I mean, he literally goes into the stall and he cooks. He's so nervous. And it's sort of let me see who I, what do I do when I'm in this, am I going to run out? Mm-hmm. Am I going to go for it? You kind of learn about what kind of person you are. I think there's something about that, putting yourself in a situation in which you can, see yourself and learn about yourself, or just do something different, I mean, he says that the beginning of the film, his first line is, I can't move. And I feel like that sort of speaks to his emotional state in general, and that he's maybe going there in order to cook himself into a moment where he does make a move,
right.
He's sort of putting himself in a situation where he will behave differently, right. Shake himself up a little bit.
Okay. So the film festival starts on the 25th, you said?
It starts on the 23rd, but the men's room is on the 25th at 4 p.m.
And where is it playing?
Midtown Landmark.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Okay, Midtown Landmark off of Monroe. Yeah, okay, 25th. The 23rd till...
The festival's from the 23rd to April 1st.
April 1st, okay.
Yeah, but the LGBT narrative shorts are on the 25th.
On the 25th, okay.
Yeah, please come check it out.
Yeah,
I'd love to talk to people about it.
And yeah.
Hear their thoughts.
So give us your website real quick so that people can look at it.
You can see the trailer, production stills, bios, whatnot at our website, which is themensroomfilm.com.
Mensroomfilm.com.
Yes.
Okay, that's good. Yeah. I guess that's pretty easy to remember. Yeah. All right. And do you have anything else after Atlanta?
Well, we have a bunch more screenings. I'm going to have another premiere in Los Angeles.
Okay.
And then I made this film through the support of the AFI Directing Workshop for Women, which is a program specifically geared to usher more women into the film industry
as
directors in Los Angeles.
Great.
So there's a big showcase of women's, of women's films and coming out of this program. So I'm going to be... I worked with a bunch of other really talented ladies in LA, and so all our films are going to show together.
All right,
in Los Angeles.
Wonderful,
really
wonderful.
About.
Okay, yeah. All right, shout out to Annie Francis out there in LA. I think that's where she lives now. She lives out and she writes for the Examiner.
Oh, cool.
And she usually calls in. She's going to start. She wrote a book. And so she hasn't been calling in, but she'll call in and give us updates on the A&E of the LGBT community.
Oh, cool.
And she's another straight ally.
Oh, great.
You know, so it's so cool.
Oh,
you
happy.
Know? Yeah. So a shout out to Nancy and Melisha. I hope you're okay. Hope to hear from you. Okay. And for now,
I want to thank you, Jane, for being here.
Thank you so much.
This was terrific. I really, you know, and I said I hopefully it'll record it on the computer, and I will have that podcast out to you guys in the next couple of days.
Awesome. Thank you for having me on. It means
yes,
a lot.
I mean, this was great. Great information. I mean, you know, really, best of luck, and hopefully I'll see you on the 25th.
Yeah, hopefully you'll come.
Yeah,
it'll be great.
Yeah, that'll be great. Okay, folks, remember, it's Marathon Week, and up next is the Peachtree Festival, and we will see you next week. So until then, good night and buenas noches.